even if you're dealing with like a smaller startup and the founder is working with you one-on-one, that advice is like gold. And definitely don't pass that opportunity up, because if you have a founder who's willing to do that, which I think all of them should, it doesn't have to be often, but it's going to really fire up that AE and motivate them.
Welcome to the State of Sales Enablement Podcast with your host, Felix Krueger. Insights and actionable advice from B2B marketing and sales experts that share what it takes to achieve sales enablement excellence.
Our guest in this week's episode knows what it takes to set sales reps up for success. Her holistic approach to the development of high-impact sales enablement programs is informed by her breadth of experience in technology sales. She is one of the most recognized sales enablers on LinkedIn, and I'm excited to have her on the show today. Please welcome Cloud Academy Sales Enablement Manager, Crystal Nicosi.
Crystal, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So great to have you here. We have actually never met before, even though we interact loads on LinkedIn. So I'm really happy to finally be able to chat to you on our podcast. Crystal, tell us, what has been your career journey so far, and what do you do now?
I started out in sales. I was this sort of bright-eyed, bushy-tailed new seller, started out as a BDR and then moved through the sales path and eventually becoming an enterprise AE. I did that for a couple of years and I was really successful, but I was sort of at this point where I was like, oh, I'm kind of getting kind of burnt out. I knew I wanted to stay close to sales, but I didn't want to necessarily lead my own team at the time. And so enablement was really just starting to come out, right? It wasn't even clearly defined. It was just like doing elements of sales enablement, but it was not what enablement looks like today. But I thought it sounded interesting. So I decided to jump in, and my first sales enablement role was with Cisco Systems. And it was, that's all she wrote. And I loved sales enablement and how it was evolving. Every year, it was just sort of taking on a new form. And so I've done enablement at huge companies like Cisco, but then I've also done enablement at early stage startups where I was employee number 4 and I was enabling actually the customer. So it was really interesting, the different things that I've seen. I've seen obviously sales, being in sales myself, but then also seeing the customer side. I even did a little bit of coaching for our customers, sellers. So it was really interesting and cool. And so now I am at Cloud Academy and I'm leading the cloud or the sales enablement function there. So building it, team of 1, and we have about 30 total sellers. So I was brought in to really build out the entire enablement function. So that's what I'm doing.
Awesome. What exactly does Cloud Academy do?
Cloud Academy is an e-learning platform. It's focused on cloud-specific content and certifications. So the area that I am enabling is the B2B side. And so many organizations are really trying to upskill, reskill their existing workforce, especially in cloud, because that's the direction that everyone is going. And there is definitely a talent shortage out there for these huge corporations. And couple that with sort of the great resignation, right? And these enterprises are trying to hold on to what they currently have. And then they're also trying to upskill and reskill as well. That way they can continue to innovate.
That's awesome. You mentioned that you have experienced the evolution of sales enablement firsthand. I always find that really interesting because if you look at different regions across the world, you see different maturity levels of sales enablement or a different understanding of sales enablement, what sales enablement is. Like from your perspective, like how has it evolved from the early stages that you've seen it in your career to up until now?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. When I first started, it was more about the training and I was even helping sales reps find some like lost opportunities. I was creating reports and sending them over to the AE, whoever was on the account, and identifying like, hey, this is could be a great opportunity to now sell them this because we might have just come out with it. It could have been a new feature. But it was very training and content focused. It wasn't at all strategic. There really wasn't an onboarding, a robust onboarding that is really enablement's wheelhouse now. It was very ad hoc, just scramble and find what you can and put a training together and let me create this document so that way they can walk away with something. When it was, we were all in offices. So it's just so much different, so much more strategic now. I am a big believer that enablement needs a head at the table because we touch that many departments. And without an enablement function touching all of those departments and bridging all of those gaps, you're going to find yourself lagging and identifying some really big gaps that need to be filled. So it's come a long way.
Absolutely. I think you still see that in less mature markets, probably Australia included, that there's still that real strong focus on training. A lot of people that you speak to where you mention sales enablement, their first thought immediately goes to training.
Yes.
Yeah, that mind shift is still happening in a lot of corners of the world. America, obviously, on the forefront of sales enablement because that's where it came from. But yeah, I think other regions in the world still have to catch up on that front.
To help organizations understand where they are in their sales enablement journey, Kruger Marketing has created a tool called the Sales Enablement Score. The Sales Enablement Score features a 20-question survey focused on the disciplines high-performing organizations have mastered according to leading industry research. Our algorithm calculates a score that indicates how much room for improvement there is for your organization. To calculate your sales enablement score with this ungated and anonymous tool, visit salesenablementscore.com. That's salesenablementscore.com.
Your role now is really focused on training, like in terms of enabling sellers to sell training to organizations. How would you say from your experience, like how do you establish a learning culture as a sales enablement leader? What did you learn from your current experience about that?
Yeah, I think there's a learning culture and there's a coaching culture. And I think those two go hand in hand. And it's really important. You can build those out at the same time because they run parallel to each other. A learning culture, I think, or any culture like coaching as well, it starts day one. It starts in onboarding. You have to give them plenty of opportunities to coach their peers, or you have to give them different. I'm a very big subscriber to everyone has different learning modalities, right? That they prefer. Some are auditory, some are visual, some really are hands-on, and that's the best way that they learn. It's so funny because I'm actually working on something right now where, and I talked a little bit about this in my SES talk, but I am a firm believer in in-depth personality assessments at the very beginning of onboarding, like day one of onboarding. And, you know, you have to gear it towards sales, obviously. And there is a vendor that I like to use, but you start it on day one and it goes very in-depth and it gives you areas where they're really great in. Some of their greatest sales qualities. And then it gives you areas that they are not as strong in doing. But it, the way that it lays out all of this information is throughout the stages of the sales cycle. So I can immediately identify, like if I've got a BDR who is much stronger in the later stages of the sales cycle, I know that chances are they're probably going to make a kick butt AE, right? But what that also lets me know is I've got to really push prospecting with them. I've got to really make sure that they're comfortable doing this. I've got to make sure that, you know, I hone in on this a little bit more throughout onboarding. So obviously it's not scalable when you're talking about constant, maybe 10, 15 sales reps coming through and onboarding. So where I thought, and I'm currently working on this, is to codify these assessments, right? Into maybe 6 buckets. And each bucket will be those sales assessments or personality assessments will be very similar. There might be some differences, but they're going to be very similar in how they learn, where they're strong, and where they need to grow. And so if you create these sort of 6 buckets, then it's a very heavy lift at the beginning. But as an enablement leader, what you want to do is you want to create sort of 6 different paths, if you will. And they only have to be slightly different, maybe in the way that you do a training. Maybe one group is watching a video maybe one group is interacting with you in a group and sort of maybe like a one-on-one type thing, or maybe you're just observing and they're diving in, getting their hands dirty with the tools. There's a lot of different things that you can do. And you have these sort of six onboarding paths. And each seller will go through the path that is going to resonate with them the most. And I truly believe that this is going to decrease ramp time. Some sellers who are in buckets may have a natural affinity toward prospecting. So chances are they're probably going to hit the ground running, right? Let's say if they're a BDR, they're going to hit the ground running versus the other group, that their first meeting or their first quality pipeline, it may come a couple weeks later, but we have that expectation. We can start to establish those benchmarks for each bucket. And so once they get through onboarding, they are now, that bucket identifies them. So with sales enablement tools that are out there, we can start putting those buckets into whatever tool you have as an identifier. And you can now start to identify patterns and trends. How quickly are they getting to that first sale? How quickly are they getting to a $100,000 deal? And you can start to see the buckets kind of moving through. And so once you have that type of data, then it becomes tweaking those paths, right? Because now you have something to work with to improve it even more. And you can follow them throughout their entire career journey, like within the organization. So you can even start to see which bucket goes on to becoming an AE, which bucket goes over to CS, which bucket becomes a manager. And so from there, then of course, you could start building out all of the fun career journeys. And then once they're onboarded, that's really where it starts, right? That learning and coaching culture. And once they're in their seats, it doesn't stop. It does not stop. So based on what their bucket is, or if you're not doing buckets, what needs to happen is that they need to go through certain certifications. They need to know exactly where they can find specific content that's easy to find. If you put out every single week a new marketing campaign, they have got to know where they can go to practice, whether it's messaging through a phone call or whether it's messaging through outreach. They need to have that messaging available for them, someplace to learn. And then obviously they need to be coached and they need to understand that that is part of the organization. They are always going to get consistent, great coaching that is standard across the teams. Because I think all too often we see different sales managers who have different coaching styles. Some are more in depth, some aren't. Then it becomes, you know, one manager may be a better coach. And so his team is actually getting a much better experience than another manager's team. And so that can't happen. It has to be totally streamlined across the board. So that has to be established. You know, there's definitely a lot that goes into it as far as this making it a culture. But I think ultimately, it has to come down from the top as well. You know, it has to come down from executive leaders. I've been in some organizations where the CRO or even the SVP would do a one-on-one session, right, with the AE and talk about their deals or talk about going over a call or going over having deeper discovery, whatever it is. And that's super important also because they know that it's coming from the top. Like, this is amazing. I am getting it firsthand coaching from a C-level executive.
That's right.
So it's such a great experience for them if an organization does that. But yeah, so there's a lot to it, but I would say the biggest thing is consistency and making sure that you're on time with your content, making sure that you're on time and even before, right? Even before it has to happen, create a schedule of programs that you want to put out. That way everyone can expect it, they can rely on it, and they know it's coming.
Mm, absolutely. That's probably the safest way to make an SDR nervous if you do role-playing with the CRO, right?
Yes, yes. I don't know if I would recommend it for a BDR. They might be a little nervous, but it truly is like, especially even if you're dealing with like a smaller startup and the founder is working with you one-on-one, that advice is like gold. And definitely don't pass that opportunity up, because if you have a founder who's willing to do that, which I think all of them should. It doesn't have to be often, but it's going to really fire up that AE and motivate them.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think we've come such a long way in terms of what you just described, in terms of the data, in terms of the accessibility of content, in terms of the follow-up with coaching. You know, I remember when I was in sales and we got sales training, there was always, you know, everybody was fired up for about 2 days after the training and then everybody forgot everything again. Everybody went back to their old ways. So I think the possibilities in the sales profession are now so much greater, like in actually building your skill set and actually mastering the craft by the support that you're getting through self-enablement. So I think it's a great time to be in sales.
Yeah, for sure. It's so funny that you say that because I remember that I would roll out a training and then I would send out a survey, right? Which was pretty company standard. And I would send out a survey. How did you do? Or how did you feel like that went? How do you feel like it helped you? Blah, blah, blah. And I would get back really great scores. And then everybody would go on their merry way. And I got these fantastic scores. So everyone was like, great job, great job. But 6 months later, it was like, okay, well, how did that impact revenue? How did that drive or develop a skill to where they could close deals faster? It was exactly like vanity metrics. Like, you know, I've talked to Adriana Romero about this a lot. And those vanity metrics are so horrible and I hate them. And you've got to have the data to back it up. You have to say, this is how it impacted revenue. And to do that, you've got to really set up that reinforcement, that coaching culture, and that learning culture.
Yeah. Sales manager is obviously a big part of actually making that work. And let's say somebody who might be listening, who works for an organization that has a bunch of sales managers, large sales team, how can they actually get buy-in and start utilizing the sales managers to start coaching and re-emphasizing? What's your advice to get started on that front?
I think you need to make it as easy as possible. Definitely not time consuming. If you can automate some things, do that. If you are able to assist in the first couple of sessions, I would definitely recommend doing that. But the first thing that I did when starting to try to get everybody's buy-in to really set up a coaching culture is I set up templates, like scorecards, if you will, in our call recording tool. I gave each manager a sort of template to follow during these coaching sessions, right? Gave them an opportunity to decide if it was going to be, you know, what part of the call is this? Where are you going to focus? And then what I did is I would go to the managers and I would say, hey, how did you like that template? Do you feel like you can use it? And depending on what they said, I might have to make some tweaks and some changes, adjustments even in the tools for them. But you just really have to make it as easy as possible because they're open to, I mean, what sales manager or sales leader isn't open to doing something that's going to increase revenue? They all are. They just don't have the time. They feel like, oh, if I've got to come up with this all on my own, I'm just going to take the rep into the room and we're going to talk about, hey, how are you doing today? How did that call go? It's really going to be all over the place. So you have to kind of narrow down what they actually need to do. And that's by putting it in a tool and then doing some follow-up, some check-ins, taking a look at those scorecards. How often are they getting graded? And, you know, these sort of sales tools that they have, like a Gong or Chorus or Refract, they all have this now where you can quickly see from an analytics dashboard, like how many graded calls are there. You can kind of take a look at all of that data, but you just have to make it as easy as possible for managers and they'll do it. They'll do it. If it's something that isn't going to require 2 hours of their time every day, they'll do it. Absolutely.
Yeah. You touched on a big one there, which is this time by the managers. I heard recently in another podcast where they were talking about that a lot of businesses are in the business of preventing sales, you know, because they give their sales managers so much admin to do and their sales reps even. So there's so much time actually spent doing admin work that they hardly have any time selling. So I think that ease of implementation definitely has to be there for sales enablement to get buy-in.
Yep, absolutely. If you're a smaller organization like Cloud Academy, I mean, I do a good chunk of coaching. Also, leverage peer-to-peer coaching. It doesn't always have to be the manager, right? It can be sales enablement. It can be one of your peers. One thing that I do through onboarding is I will actually have the new hires listen to I'll have them pick three calls. Pick three calls from the call recording tool that we use. Just make sure it's a discovery or a demo, or even like where you did get the prospect on the phone, like from a BDR perspective. And I will actually have them use the same scorecard that the managers use, and I will tell them to grade it, right? Go ahead and grade those calls. And then I take it a step further, and I will have them set up a 30-minute session with the AE to deliver the feedback. So at first, they were like, we have to give this feedback. Aren't they going to hate us? It's like, no, because again, it's when you develop that coaching culture, it becomes like everybody understands that coaching is going to come from everywhere. It's not just going to come from your manager or someone who has done the job longer than you have, because new hires coming in with some sales experience, it's pretty amazing that it's that fresh set of eyes, right, on how they perceive how a great discovery call goes. And then it also gives them an opportunity to be able to kind of hone that coaching skill, that leader skill, where they're delivering feedback in a way that's positive and encouraging, and it'll carry forward with them throughout their journey. So that's one thing that I do like to do, but I'll leverage who you can in the sales org, have them record themselves overcoming objections, and go in and give them feedback when you can. It doesn't always have to be a 1 hour session, although I do recommend managers do that at least once a week, but other coaching sessions can come from peers. They can come from enablement or even new hires.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I want to touch on something that you said earlier around tying training and coaching back to business outcomes. In other words, revenue. How would you actually do that down the line? Like, are you able to, through the data that you gather, actually make the connection that you've been able to shorten the sales cycle because you've implemented that sort of training, or how does it work?
Yeah, so right now it's pretty tough for me because we don't have a sales enablement tool. So everything that I do is all in pretty much Google Suite. We have Outreach and Salesforce and things like that, but not a specific enablement tool. But the way that I am trying to align everything that I'm putting out is I like to sort of work from, okay, I start high, kind of high in the funnel, right? And like, here's business goals. And then I will take a step back from that and think about my programs, right? Think about how, let's say we start with BDRs, for example. How many meetings does it take for us to get an opportunity that has closed one? How many meetings do they need to make? Do they need to create? Or, you know, for an AE, how many discovery calls do they need to have? Taking a look at even other data, like how many stakeholders are on the call when we have a higher probability of closing this deal? What should they target? So I think it's about finding just those little milestones that they can hit to let them know that they're on track. And then it's, of course, tied to the business goals, right? In net new business, here's how many meetings you need to hit by this time, because you need to stay on track to make sure that you contribute to hitting that business goal. So it really comes down to first approaching it from a higher level and then breaking it down into milestones and then detailing out those milestones, gathering the data. That's the hardest part, honestly, is gathering all of the data and trying to figure out what programs you're going to run when and where in the sales cycle. So I keep a calendar of scheduled enablement programs. But yeah, it just starts high, knowing the business goals and then creating those milestones based on the data from Salesforce.
Okay, got it. So it's good to hear that it is actually possible in a spreadsheet as well.
I would not recommend it by any means. It is possible, yeah. But it would be even more beautiful if I had an enablement tool. But I do the best I can with it.
If senior management are listening, Crystal needs an enablement tool.
Oh, trust me. I have banged on that table for it.
Great. I also want to touch on something else that you said about having multiple inputs and feedback in coaching sessions, you know, and having different viewing angles. And I think that really also plays into the diversity conversation, diversity in tech and diversity in sales. There's a lot of talk going on about diversity, especially in those big tech brands. which, as McKinsey research has proven, actually has a positive impact on business performance. The more viewpoints you bring to the table, the more sound your strategy is, the more aspects you have considered, and so on. So if you consider that, sales enablement and sales should also benefit from diversity, right? Like, what are your thoughts on that? And how do you think we can contribute as a sales enablement community to create a more diverse tech world?
Yeah, this is something that is really close to my heart. I am a board member at Cloud Academy for our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee, our initiative, I should say. I play a big part in taking on sort of the internal communications around what Cloud Academy is doing to really drive this initiative. One of the things that we started doing is we started actually giving our licenses away to diverse sources. So for instance, we were working with this group, and I don't handle this portion, my counterpart does, but it was a group that was solely focused on Latinas in tech. And so it was obviously a nonprofit, they're all nonprofit companies, and we gave them 25 licenses to become AWS certified. So they could go in, they could do anything really. I mean, they could do, if they wanted Azure certification or AWS certification, GCP, they could go on and develop training plans and actually earn their certifications. So we're trying to do things like that, diversity, ethnicity, and then also gender. We're trying to really tackle that. One of the things that we are doing in the group that I work with is the internal communications for Cloud Academy is, one, we're doing a survey and we're including everything in there. So ethnicity, you have sexual orientation, cultural areas across the board, right? And if people are comfortable, they can take the survey. And if people are not comfortable, they don't have to, totally anonymous. And so we're trying to grab this survey to first be able to share internally, like, here's where we are as far as diversity is concerned. And we're going to segment it out by each department. So sales is going to be an area that we're going to really focus on to drive more women into. That is something that I always talk to leadership about. Like, our sales force, we have 4 women out of 30. So we definitely need to do some work there. Another thing that we're also doing is an inclusivity course that I am putting together now. And we're going to have everyone in company-wide take this course. So that way they have a full understanding just what inclusion really is. And then once we have everyone go through that, we're going to ask for volunteers, because we want to put together a panel, a diverse panel, whether it's sexual orientation or specific ethnic background, a female who's in sales, or a female even on the tech side. We want to put a panel together of about 5 different people, and we want to have them and the entire company join this call. And each one of them will talk about their experiences, what they have experienced from their eyes, like getting into the role that they're in or into the space that they're in, and what they've encountered, both positive and negative. So I'm trying to make it really an eye-opener, but I think for just enablement, the way that we can really impact is start joining those DEI boards, right? Or those committees where you actually have a say in what the organization is doing with those initiatives. If it's important to you, and contribute for as much time as you actually have. And then I think, you know, we're all sort of doing our part. I don't know if there's anything that sales enablement specifically can do as a function. I mean, I'm definitely open to ideas, but just from an individual perspective, I think as enablement leaders, we should definitely be on that DEI board or committee contributing to what we can, especially females in sales, which I'm really big on, and females in tech, and also different ethnicities in tech, and also even in sales. We definitely need to see the experiences and hear about them to make sure that we can drive some change.
Absolutely. One of the most interesting discussions that I've heard about that on the topic recently was at the SES Experience recently, at the conference. There was the APAC roundtable, and there was a lot of talk about creating a internship program for sales enablement, which should also be specifically targeted towards diversity. So that means people with backgrounds that might not have the opportunities to enter the profession through the traditional ways, through some sort of structural issues or whatever, are given the opportunity specifically to join those internships and to get an entry into the sales enablement profession.
That's awesome. Yeah, love that.
I think that's a great approach, and I think that's a great way to think about diversity too, that you actually start at the grassroots level, then nurture it from there.
Yep, exactly. And the younger that the sales teams are, the more aware they are of diversity. But I will tell you that we have our US employees, and then we also have our Swiss office. And in the Swiss office, I mean, everyone works globally, but we're in 11 different countries, employees in 11 different countries. But our Swiss office is probably 90% Italian. And it's interesting because they really weren't aware of like DEI. And they really weren't, you know, they just have never been exposed to it on a level that the States has. And so like we have so many different laws in place. We've got affirmative action in place, and we have so many different things and so many areas of opportunity to grow with this, you know, Black Lives Matter. We have so much here because we're such a melting pot. And so I sort of took that for granted that they would know, but they were like, what's DEI? And we're like, And so it's taken a little bit of education to explain to them what it is, why it's important for everyone to feel included, to feel like they have a voice. It was really interesting, but I think we've gotten on board now.
That's awesome. They're included.
Yeah.
Crystal, I also want to ask you, because you're so well connected in the sales enablement community and you share a lot of your opinions around sales enablement as a profession. What are your predictions in terms of the future of sales enablement? What are we going to see in the next few years of evolution of sales enablement?
First, I truly believe that it's going to become more visible from an executive perspective. We may even see chief enablement officers soon, really having a level seat at the table. That's sort of a little more strategic, but I think as practitioners, I think what's going to become extremely important is sort of what I was talking about in the coaching and learning culture. I think we're really going to understand if we want to make significant impact to revenue, we're going to have to get rid of the one size fits all, you know, be putting everyone through the same type of onboarding. And another thing, in addition to that, that sort of goes hand in hand is I think a lot more is going to fall on our plate for mental health and wellness. We are going to need to start evaluating that in our sellers. And the technology is out there to be able to identify when someone is close to experiencing burnout. So as enablers, we're going to have to start to really think about the programs, when we're going to put them out. Is this too much for this particular team or this particular individual? And if a seller is showing signs of burnout, immediately catching that and with the sales manager, having just a good, warm conversation around what we can do to help. So I think that's really going to take a front seat with enablement. I could see it really starting to play out maybe Q2 of next year, where we're going to start seeing quite a bit of that, because this pandemic, I don't think we have fully seen the long-term effects of it. We've seen sort of the short-term and where people and their mental wellness, how it's impacted in the short-term, but we need to start thinking more long-term. How can we keep burnout from happening? Right? How can we keep this depression, especially those that do continuously work from home and they may feel isolated? I mean, I can't imagine in Australia being completely isolated for 4 months. Like, that would drive anyone absolutely insane, especially like a 25-year-old kid who is a sales rep. Then you're constantly bombarding them with training and coaching and quota and just whatever else they have on their plate. And we have no idea how they're dealing with it. And, you know, that costs the company a lot of money. One, if someone just leaves, right? If they just quit. But when you start seeing the signs of lower activity and you start seeing some disengagement from someone who may have been a top performer or even not a top performer, but when you start seeing all of those signs, chances are it's probably too late. They might have emotionally checked out already. So it's so important to be able to identify these things, because it could actually make the company money if we can sort of target what is an optimal level of performance. What does that look like? Because you can't continue to push like a workhorse, that high performance, high performance, high performance. Anyone is going to burn out from that. So it's important to find that balance of optimal levels. I think that's going to fall on enablement.
Yeah. I think that's a great call out. I think sales is such a performance-driven department often. I mean, ideally, in terms of revenue performance, but you also have to make sure that it's sustainable, right? You can't burn out your people. So I think that's a great call out. And probably one of the positive things that come out of the pandemic long-term, that there's more of a focus on mental health in general.
Yep, exactly. I think that's going to play such a big part. We've got to be able to have balance for our sellers. And from a business perspective, they are amazing, wonderful assets. And we need to take care of our assets. And we put them through the onboarding and the training, and we've invested so much into them. They're not just a revenue generating piece. We've got to put that human back in it and realize that we're dealing with human beings, and how can we best get the best performance? I mean, when you think about, like, I just created a post about this the other day, actually. When you think about an Olympic athlete and you think about how high their performance is, there was actually a documentary about it. Michael Phelps narrated it. Essentially, what he was talking about was advocating for mental health care post-Olympics for Olympic athletes, because essentially what happens is, like, they go through, and whether they win gold or not, and, you know, it's like, oh, well, back to normal life. And they have literally just worked their entire lives for that sport. It's how they identify who they are. So even Olympic athletes, you can't just continue plugging in high performance and expect that everything goes back to normal. There's got to be balance.
Absolutely. Crystal, we're running out of time, but before I let you go, where can people find you online? Where can people follow you? Because you're a true social media superstar. Love your content. Where can other people find you online that aren't following you already?
The only place I am really is on LinkedIn. I'm also on Instagram under just my name, Crystal Nicozzi. It's crystal.nicozzi. And there I put out a little bit of different stuff than I do on LinkedIn. It's slightly more personal, kind of more the human. So if you want to catch me drinking a coffee or something. No, I do try to put out definitely valuable things, but you will find some personal pictures in there too.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Crystal.
Thank you so much, Felix. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
You've been listening to the State of Sales Enablement podcast. To ensure you never miss an episode, subscribe in your favorite podcast player. If you want to learn more about sales enablement, you'll find a growing number of articles, videos, and templates specifically for enterprise technology businesses at kruegermarketing.com/learn. That's KRUEGER marketing.com/learn.